Welcome to the Money Insights Podcast, where high income earners come to learn wealth building strategies that will take them from high income to high net worth. With your hosts, financial and wealth building experts, Christian Allen and Rod Zabriskie.
Welcome into another episode of the Money Insights Podcast. I'm Christian Allen here with my co-host, Rod the Pod Zabriskie. Rod, what's up, man?
Hey, I'm doing great. I'm on a little bit of a euphoric high, having been had a lot of time with family.
Mushrooms? Like, what was it specifically that was? Oh, you said euphoric, so that could mean anything. That could mean anything.
Yeah.
Don't self-incriminate. Never mind. Don't self-incriminate.
I'm high on family.
That's scary. Rod, you've got 7 kids. You always have a lot of people in your family. What was different?
Okay, so what's happened is over the last 5 years or so, we went from 7 kids at home to 2 kids at home. But this last week, we had a special event. Last time we talked about Spencer. And so they were in town from El Paso. But anyway, that means just everybody came. So we had not only the big day with their kind of their wedding stuff, but the whole week. We did a big family reunion out of it, and we just had a lot of fun time together. So tomorrow's the big breakup. My wife's going to be having a rough time, but for now, we're still
riding it. You guys are still riding it. Okay, well, that's exciting. Sorry to hear that it has to end. Yeah. If it was me, I would have been like, when is this going to end? Not that I don't love my family. I do, but a lot of people, too much time with a lot of people, and I'm just like, I'm worn out. Gotcha. So anyway, but I appreciate the people like you who can do that. Rod, I did get together with a group of like work colleagues, and I shared the video of me diving, and I think I should probably share this video with everybody because it's so ridiculous. I decided to go up the bounce house with like the 6 and 7 year old kids, and by the way, they were like ecstatic about this. They're like, who is this dude? What is he doing? But I was like, all right, I've got to go down this bounce house. So anyway, I went up there and I looked down, and the first thing I thought was like, man, this is steeper than I thought. I'm a little nervous. but I also had already committed. So I was like, I can't just like get on my butt and like slide down like a wimp. So I had to just go all into it. I dove down. It basically ended up like a barrel roll. I should have yelled, as you wish, like
that would have made it
that's
better.
Kind of what it sounds like. If I could go back in time, that would have been perfect, because that's kind of what I looked like. I was rolling down that thing. But anyway, it was a fun time. Glad you're having fun. I had a pretty good weekend. Nice weather. Like, I can't complain, man. Yeah. Okay. Rod, as much fun as we had, like I always say, this is not the reason that people tune into this pod. At least I doubt. I doubt it's the reason. Not that they don't appreciate your family updates and my, you know, injury updates in this case, because that's what happened. But today I want to talk about an interesting subject. So, Two Market Media, they're the kind of PR marketing firm that helps us out on the back end, does a lot of our marketing stuff. They send me what they call stitches to record it. And a stitch basically is a response to another person's comments, right?
Yep.
So this last week, I got a few of them from them from Dave, that are Dave Ramsey ones, which are always in like kind of easy, like an easy one to go after because Dave's so polarizing. Mm-hmm. And so, and you know, we get a lot of response. Sometimes it encourages some visceral reactions that can make things fun. In fact, Rod, even my brother-in-law and I got in a little tiff on LinkedIn just the other day. Can you believe that?
On LinkedIn. I remember you talking about some in person, but
yeah, he decided to take it to LinkedIn.
Nice.
So in this case, I had done a stitch like we're going to talk about here, one of Dave's a response to one of Dave's videos, and I agreed with part of it and disagreed with part of it, but he didn't like any of it. And so he was there to let me know it, and we took our personal vendetta to the whole world. So it was
nice.
A lot of fun.
Okay.
Anyway, it was great. So, but that's, again, I'm getting off topic. Back to our stitches. Dave Ramsey sent in a stitch. That's what inspired the topic for today. And I think as people listen to it, would you say it's fair to say we have a highly educated audience?
That would be Very safe thing to say, yes.
I think you probably would be. Very highly educated.
Many years in school, yes.
Many years. Do you think many of those people use like student loans?
I think it's safe to say. I know, at least with the people
you
work with.
You think maybe a few people had to have student loans to get there. I don't know. I just was curious. Okay. That being the case, I want to listen to this stitch. So let's cue up Dave Ramsey's comments on, well, you'll hear them, but it's on college education, and then we're going to jump into it.
21% of young adults right now are delaying getting married. 31% of young adults are delaying moving out of their parents' home. 40% of young adults delay saving for retirement. 47% of young adults are delaying buying a home because of student loan debt. First rule of college is pay cash. There is no good student loan. There is no circumstance under which you should do a student loan. Ever, 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 ever.
Okay, there it is. Dave has spoken. The question is, has Dave spoken the truth? He says, now he brings out some real issues, right? There's some significant issues out there. College education is absolutely a burden on young people today. It's more difficult than it's ever been because the cost has gone up so much, and simultaneously wages haven't increased at the same rate that things like higher education have, right?
Yeah.
So is it a real issue that people are finding themselves in significant debt as they get out of school? Absolutely. Without question, that's true. Okay. Now let's set that aside. We agree with Dave on this. Now we get to what I would say is certainly the more controversial take, which is twofold. One, the only way to pay for education is cash.
Yeah.
And then in conjunction with that is, he says, there is no good student loan, period, end of story.
Never.
Never, ever, ever. Something like that, right?
Yeah.
No good student loan. And so I thought about that and I was like, okay, well, let's have a conversation on this. And I'm going to set the stage a little bit because one of the things that makes Rod and I's like partnership work together is that we have a lot of differences in the way that we function and work in the world. And it helps us to like be pretty compatible. So I'm often the person who's a little bit more alternative, a little bit more radical, a little bit more out there. Rod's going to be the opposite of that oftentimes, right? More traditional. Is that fair,
yeah,
Rod?
I think that's okay. True.
Okay. So that being the case, that exact same thing played out in our college education. Can you believe that? I'm a proud college dropout. Rod spent many years getting his college education and a master's degree and MBA. So like we've come to a similar place. We just got there from very different directions, right?
Yeah.
So, okay. So I thought that might be an interesting perspective for people to have as we're talking about whether it makes sense to go to college in the traditional sense. And like, mm-hmm. we're just going to get into it. So a couple of things I want to hit before we get into this conversation. Number one, Rod, I'm going to throw some stats out there. As of the latest data, the average annual cost of tuition and fees at a private college is approximately $37,000. Public universities charge an average of $10,000. And then if you're out of state, it's like $27,000.
Yeah.
So the average student loan debt for recent college graduates is about $30,000, which is up, I guess, 50%, up $10,000 from 10 years ago. So we're continuing to move, right?
Yeah.
And we hear about this all the time. Like This isn't breaking news that student loan debt is a massive problem. I mean, mm-hmm. it's like one of the biggest political topics that we, you know, of our day. Yeah. Okay. So that being the case, Rod, what do you think? What comes to mind when you see some of the data?
Oh, well, so there's the data. And then also I'm just going to throw this in there because I also read some of the comments that came off of that video. And people just aren't buying it. In other words, the problems that he talked about are true, right? So if in reality people are delaying marriage and not able to get into a home and all these different things because of student debt, that is an issue, right? That's something that we should be talking about. And again, like you said, politically, it's been a big topic. And forgiving the debt is a solution. Dave's solution is don't ever get into the debt. But I think we can agree that there is somewhere in between, because if you're...
Whoa, Rod, you're getting ahead of us, my friend.
Oh no.
We haven't even gotten into the debate yet.
Okay. Sorry about that.
So I want to focus before we get into whether you think there's a middle ground, or whether you think that Dave's totally up in that, or whether I think Dave is right on target and you should absolutely have no debt whatsoever, because I'm a proud college dropout. I can't possibly believe that you should go to school like and spend money on it. Like, I became
your money or anyone else's.
Yeah, I became like what I am today, like a 40-year-old who's like pretty well independently wealthy by doing the opposite of that, right? Yeah. So now I didn't go with Dave's plan and paying cash. I just decided to like walk away from it altogether and focus on building the business, right?
Yeah.
So, okay, but I don't want to give away that. That's just a teaser. So let's get back to the broader issue of what comes to your mind. Think about your kids, think about grandkids, think about future, whatever. When you see that, like, that's the issue, like people are walking away with 30, 40, 50. And, you know, a lot of the people that we have as clients have walked away from theirs with 200, 250. I met a guy, Rod, that had $850,000 in student debt as a physician.
Yeah.
And I still can't remember how, like I thought about that. And I still remember thinking like that was outrageous, because like, it's not uncommon to see $250,000 in student loans,
sure,
but it's pretty uncommon to see that. And I don't know if he was like living the luxury life while he was going to school or what, but either way, it's still a lot. And for the average person, like, these numbers oftentimes represent somebody's, like, especially early coming out of college, that's like your entire year's pre-tax income. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like, to look at these, people look at it and they're like, great, okay, I'm going to pay this off over the next 47 years.
Yeah. Which they do, right?
Which is what happens.
They just build it out that way. Yeah. So
what do you think about?
Yeah. So I think it fills a real need to say, and again, this is often the problem we have with Dave, right? Is he takes such an extreme stance and says stuff like never, ever, 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 as if there's no place for it. Nobody should ever do it. But in reality, there are responsible ways to do it, right? Take on the debt. You're going to make more money because you did it, because you took on the debt. Otherwise, you stay where you are. Again, maybe you move up. Maybe you take the path that you did, right? Again, I'm not saying that and taking debt is for everyone. I'm not saying taking the other side and saying school is or the debt is never appropriate for anybody, because you want to take the circumstances, the situation
as
is.
You stole my line, but you're absolutely right. The situation is definitely the boss. And I was actually like planning to bust out the situation as the boss later in the pod. So you were ahead of me on that one. Okay, but I think what I want to do here is you're going to kind of take the role of focusing more on the benefits, the side of, hey, here's the value that you can get from having an education and what that means to you. And I can kind of take a little bit of the other side of that, where I chose to leave school, get really more focused in my education and in the business, right? I should be clear, like I spent time more focused in financial education. I just really struggled to get through that generals. And, you know, we were in unique situations in that we get out of college, for both of us, we went on LDS missions, we get back, we're 21 years old, right? Now, you may have done school before that, but I didn't really, because of when things worked out. So I'm back and I'm 21 and I'm like, I got to get my life started here, right? And suddenly I'm 21 and I'm sitting there in generals and I'm just like bored out of my mind. And I'm thinking, there has got to be a better way. Well, for me, there was a better way, right?
Yeah.
And you know, we'll try to make a little bit of an argument as to why it could be a better way for a lot of people. And, you know, but we'll make an argument for both sides of that.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's get into, Rod, the question of whether going to school just in general is worth it. And maybe from your perspective, and I have some pretty, I don't know if it's a hot take. Maybe I'll start. Okay. You can be thinking.
Okay.
So here's maybe my semi-hot take. if you're going to school to just get a bachelor's degree, then just forget it. Don't mess with it. That's my hot take. It's not worth it. I don't think you're getting any better working job careers. Now, the statistical data would suggest that you can earn a little bit higher living, right? But like, yeah, from like a real world application standpoint, if you're like an ambitious person who wants to go and is driven, like, you won't have really any advantages by having a bachelor's degree that you would have. I say that, I'm thinking maybe of a couple of caveats, but I know lots of people who will regularly say things like, well, I have my degree, but it doesn't get me anything. I still, you know, unless I've had all of the work experience too, then, mm-hmm, you know, if I were to go, well, I'll give you an example. My wife, Heather, has a bachelor's degree, and we're in a second marriage. So she ended up having to go back to work. And as in a bachelor's degree, she was in her, you know, early 30s, and she basically was having to start at the bottom of the rung. Like, it wasn't, mm-hmm, like, hey, you've got a bachelor. Like, she still needed the work experience. So it was like starting right at the beginning, and she didn't feel like there was many advantages. Now, all of my family is college educated, by the way. I am the sole non-college educated member of my family. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that's really interesting is none of them did student loan debts, like, okay, none of them.
Okay.
So this was like, they like lived Dave's ideas here. They actually, mm-hmm, did it the way that Dave suggested. And for my brothers, it took them like a while to get there. My sisters were like machines. Yeah. So they somehow managed to do everything in like a short period of time. But for my brothers, it just took them a couple years longer than it would take typically, because they were working in between saving money. And if they didn't have enough to go for a period of time, they brought their load down, or they skipped a semester, and then they did. So like, I see Dave's thing, and I'm like, okay, I get it. Like, there are, mm-hmm, some situations where it makes sense. But I also get that there's situations where, now I've been all over the place. Back to the original point, Rod, what do you think, yeah, of my take that if you're going to just get a 4-year degree, my take is you might as well walk away and forget about it. Boom. What do you think?
Well, you're not going to be surprised, because my answer is that it depends.
The situation is the boss. That's way better, Rod. So instead of, so anytime you say to yourself, this is what I want to have change. Anytime you come and you're like, you know what? It depends. I want you to say, no, the situation is the boss, because that's way more fun.
Good. Way okay, more let's, fun. Let's rehearse
okay.
that.
Okay. Okay.
So well, my thought is that actually the situation is the boss, because
I agree.
If you're going into, especially like I'm thinking about the sciences, engineering, you know, that kind of thing, you can't get to where you want to go without the degree. But in order to get licensed, to even get that first job in the engineering field.
You need to get education too, though? Like,
no.
Like, as a scientist, don't you have to get like higher education?
Yeah, if you want to be like a true like scientist and you're in the university doing research, doing those things, and absolutely you go all the way through, you get your PhD and you do that. But if you want to be an engineer, you want to work in oil and gas, or you want to work in whatever, structural design.
Okay, I guess I thought that engineering became like legit engineers were like 6-year degree things. Is it only a 4-year degree to be an engineer?
It could, yes, okay. It could be.
Okay.
So I worked in a structural and engineering firm, and most of them only had the 4-year degree. There were a few others.
Okay.
And in order to become a true like SE structural engineer, you did, but to be a PE, I don't know what the PE
okay.
stood for.
Okay, so what engineer. You're saying is there's situations where it can get you a job. So maybe my next question is, what kind of earning potential do you have as a, like a, if you have a bachelor's degree and you're wanting to go to a, you know, work at a structural in engineering firm?
Well, okay, so again, if you're trying to get hired on as an engineer, then it doesn't, I mean, if you don't have the degree, it doesn't matter, right? You just don't even have the opportunity to get that job. So then you would work in like CAD. Oh, it's not CAD anymore. It's 3D.
See, and I should clarify. I am thinking of this more broadly in terms of income. So if you're someone that's like money, like you're not just money driven. If you're driven for like maybe just, well, higher let's say income. Financial success.
Yeah.
Let's say that's an important element. I think my argument is you could go and continue to get the degree and maybe even get a little bit of specialized knowledge if you want to be. But here's the thing, man, like I don't know. I guess there's some, I'm running into some messy stuff in my head as I'm saying it, because I'm like, okay, I guess if you wanted to start an engineering firm, then you would need to have at least the 4-year degree to be able to start a firm to do that. So maybe that, but again, from an earning potential standpoint, I would just argue that you should go do something else, not waste the 4 years in school.
Well,
and you'll actually be way better off.
Yeah. And so your example with Heather, and that would be true with me, right? My undergraduate degree was in marketing communications, right? Can people go out and do marketing and be really good at it without having that degree? Of course. And on the flip side of that, having gone and gotten my degree, when I was out looking for jobs, was I looking for, and again, this was 20 years ago, but I wasn't going to get a $50,000 job. I had to start at a $30,000 job, right? And is that more than I could have
gotten? That's aging you.
If I didn't get the degree, no, I probably could have got the same $30,000 job 4 years earlier, right?
Yeah.
What I'm saying is you're making a good point, depending on where you're going with that, with your career path.
If you're one of those people, like, so I'll be honest with you, this is going to sound a little bit weird, but I don't think I came out of college thinking like, hey, I really want to go into financial services. Mm-hmm. Right. So a lot of us kind of fall back into whatever careers that we end up doing.
Yeah.
And so I don't think, if I'm being totally honest, I necessarily cared specifically what my career was. I did care about was finding a pathway to success, to provide for provide for my family, accomplish the goals and objectives I have. So while I want to do something I enjoy, for me, it didn't have to be like being a specific thing. Now, but I'm different than a lot of, like, there are certainly people who are like, I've been wanting to be a doctor since I was 4. That's what I'm doing. I just, you know, crush the MCAT. Like, mm-hmm. That's what they're going to do.
But you make a good point.
So for that person, there's some give and take.
Yeah. But that person is going on to higher ed, right? But
yes, that's a good point.
If you were to ask people, people who just did the 4-year degree, and how many of them are working in the field that they got their education in? And I would say a majority are not. Even the engineer, right? They went and they did the engineering thing. Maybe it just wasn't, you know, working out for them. They just weren't enjoying whatever they were doing. And so they end up going into sales or they end up going into something else.
Yeah,
that's
true.
Very, very common.
It's true. Okay. Well, it's an interesting debate. I think the obvious answer is the situation is the boss on really all of these. And I think Dave knows that as well as anybody, but Dave loves a hot take. He knows that he's going to get a lot of people, a lot of responses. He's going to get a lot of clicks. And he did a good job of that here. So, but I did think it was a fun conversation. And of course, like I said, to our point earlier, our audience consists of an incredibly high educated group of people on average, since so many people are, physicians, right? That's like... Yeah. Probably 50 to 60% of the audience that listens to us and our clientele. So like, it just by way of that, obviously you have to be higher educated. And so when they hear that, I have to think they're like, you've got to be kidding me. Like every one of them are looking at it and saying, even if I started my business, right? Like maybe it's a dental practice or whatever. Like obviously you can't start a dental practice without going to school. And for many of those people going to get a higher education, like it takes some of these people 8 to 10 years to get the level of education so that they can go. And by the way, they can then drive a really powerful income that they can do a lot with. But just imagine if they were trying to pull that off, they don't have family money. Like maybe they've taken advantage of any grants that are there, but there's just no money. They've got to either go and do it and take on student loan debt, which is most of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or just walk away and do whatever they're going to do. Like,
yeah.
That's insane. It's ridiculous.
It is.
So I don't know. All right, Rod. So let's switch gears a little bit. Now that we've talked about what I think is a pretty interesting subject, although one that most people think Dave's just probably being ridiculous on, right?
Agreed. Yep.
But now that we've hit on that, let's get into solutions to funding college education, right? Because now we've done an episode in the past on, you know, ways to fund college education. We'll probably hit on that, but hit on some of those same things. But I want to talk about like some of the alternatives, mm-hmm. right? Some of the, now we all know about the regular things that you can do. You can, you know, fund a 529. That's probably the most typical thing that people mm-hmm. do is they fund a 529, right? And because of the, because there's some tax favorability that comes with that. But let's talk about some of the ways that we've seen people maybe in our world worry about this issue. Like we know college education is a massive cost. Most people would agree that there are situations where it definitely makes sense to take on a loan. And yet we have an audience of people who in their ideal world would actually like to live Dave's principle on this point, not in that they're going to make their child pay cash for it, mm-hmm. but we know a lot of people who would just like to pay for their kids' educations, who yeah. absolutely believe in it, right? Again, we're talking about all of these physicians that are making $500,000 plus mm-hmm. who are able to do a lot. Now, they take on a huge burden early on, but if they manage it well, they're certainly able to get ahead, right?
Yeah.
But those people, they want to try to help kind of their children and the next generation do something special, and they don't want them to have to take on that debt. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the question is what to do? Now we put ourselves in our client's shoes who are, you know, the average person, and let's say they're 48 years old and they've got a 12-year-old, a 9-year-old, and a, you know, 7-year-old, and they've got to be thinking about how am I going to fund these kids' education, because the cost of education is so crazy that I can't imagine a world where they just have to take on student loan and hope for the best.
Yeah.
What comes to mind?
Well, I mean, you mentioned the 529, and there are other ways that you can build that type of a fund, right? So we often talk about how life insurance is a good way to do that, a good alternative to the 529. You get similar tax treatment, but it's not, doesn't have to be earmarked for education, right?
Yeah, well, and let's talk about that a little bit more, because obviously we talk so much about life insurance as a wealth creation tool. We talk about yeah. it as a way to, you know, generate higher returns on investments. But sometimes we don't talk about it as a really powerful place to stash cash, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A place that I can get a return, and it's a really incredible opportunity to multi-purpose dollars. So what I mean by that is most of us don't use every dollar that we're like, we don't have every single dollar go through our investment fund into the invest. Like there's usually some slush money that's existing mm-hmm. there. Well, like it's such a powerful tool because it can be multitasked in so many ways. One of the ways in which it could do that is it could be utilized for college education, right? Mm-hmm. A simple way to do that would be just to have a slush fund that I keep at the bottom of my overall investment fund, which most people do anyway. Mm-hmm. And maybe you add to it incrementally and let the returns inside the policy generate over a period of, you know, 10 or 12 years. And now you're in a really great position to still fund college education, but it hasn't really taken away from your ability to continue to invest at a high level, right?
Right.
It could be that you're saying, hey, I'm going to take a small portion of the returns I get and, you know, and shovel it there. But my point is just to say, like, one of the things that makes it so powerful is that, to your point, it has tax benefits. It's completely liquid. I get to leverage it against the life insurance, the company's money, like all of these benefits. And obviously, at the same time, the more cash I have in there, I also get a higher death benefit and long-term care benefit. So like, it's this tool that gives me so many things. It's kind of like a, why wouldn't I learn how to utilize it for funding my college as well? It just yeah. kind of makes sense.
Another interesting thing on that is when I do get to college, my kids are ready to go to college and I'm using that money, I'm actually going to do the same thing. I'm actually going to take loans against the cash value and use that to pay for it. Because what we see happen is that, you know, people are in their peak earning years while their kids are at school. So when they're done, and now you have this loan that you've taken against the policy, but now you have higher levels of income. You're wanting to put that money somewhere that'll create, for example, tax-free income in retirement. And so being able to pay down that loan is actually another beneficial piece of that entire plan.
Yep, I love it. Another one that comes to mind, Rod. This is now we're and in this one we're still leaving the initial point, life insurance, right? So mm-hmm. I'm saving money inside the investment optimizer, and I love the idea that people go and invest in an actual asset on their kid's behalf. Like, I don't remember when I first heard this idea, but it just like rang true to me because I think it could be a really powerful way to change like the entire trajectory of like their life and their family. Because we talk about so often like why we believe it's more beneficial to have cash flowing assets in retirement, right? Mm-hmm. And cash mm-hmm. flow in retirement than it is to just have a lump sum of money, especially if it's like qualified money, right? Yeah. Money with a bunch of restrictions. Well, the same thing applies here when a person gets to the age, like how powerful is it if I can give that person, give my kid a cash flowing piece of property that they're going to use as a way to manage money in that situation. Like, again, as long as they have a cash flow opportunity, like then they're in a really powerful position. Whereas, you know, it's easy to burn through $100,000 or whatever it is and suddenly be like, well, what do I do? Right. Yeah. So I guess my thought is one of the ways I really like it, like to it as an alternative to your traditional 529s and even to like just cash or even just cash inside of a life insurance policy, mm-hmm. it would be using an actual asset. And that could be a bunch of different things, but, you know, most often I'll hear it be like a, you know, a property, a piece of real estate or something like that, that they can go and almost take over, but not take it over necessarily with the intent to sell, take it over with the intent to manage and grow and build upon. And now you've got this like really powerful foundation for the rest of their life.
Yeah. Speaking of education, right? So they've received their kind of formal education, but then on the side, they're learning what some people might say is even more valuable education in terms of how to build wealth, how to manage cash flow, how to do those things as well. So yeah, I agree.
Okay. So I thought of one other one, Rod, that could be useful for some people. And I don't know how many people have used this. I think you would have to probably start pretty early in order to make sense and make the numbers work. But we use the capital avalanche as a strategy that can produce higher income in retirement, right? Mm-hmm. And typically, you know, the longer the duration that we can like let it sit and bake, the more powerful the cash flow that comes from it is, right?
Yeah.
So, but if I was thinking, hey, I've got 15 or, you know, 15 years or, you know, probably anything more than 10 years before mm-hmm. college education, I could make a really, you know, a strong argument for using a policy to create a cash flow situation that they can then, it's using the same principles that you're using with real estate. They're mm-hmm. taking on a policy that's intended to continue to produce cash flow indefinitely. Well, it's one that would certainly require education, right? Especially if you wanted to continue to fund it ongoingly. Mm-hmm. So I say that thinking, I'm just thinking through an example in my head. Let's just say we have one of our clients who's like, hey, I really like the idea of using Capital Avalanche to fund my kid's education.
Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and start doing this. Maybe I put $100,000 in it year one, and then I'm going to, and maybe it's for year one and two, and then I'm going to let the loans come in and they're going to kick in and then they're going to be what, you know, funds the rest of the policy.
Yeah.
Well, what happens then is I get to this point in time, let's just say it's 15 years out where, well, certainly I could like cash out the policy and take my net equity, mm-hmm. but that's not where the power is, right? The power is taking over an asset that has become a cash flow producing machine. And so then it would be a situation where you're kind of transferring the ability to utilize this policy to the next generation where they could do the same thing that they're doing with real estate, only, you know, and what I mean by that is manage the underlying asset, learn how to take the cash flow off it responsibly. And by the way, the irresponsible situation isn't so bad either, right? Mm-hmm. If they run out of cash, like you turn the policy into a paid up policy, and you know it's not like the end of the world. But yeah. But my point here is just to say it's another powerful way to do it, because one, you're utilizing leverage, and some of this I'm just kind of thinking through on the fly here. But if you're someone who's maybe I don't know. I guess I'll just say, if you're short on the ability to just fund the amount that you want to get in there, well, obviously the Capital Avalanche is powerful because you're using other people's money. Mm-hmm. A bank is literally coming in at some point, or I'm utilizing the insurance company's money, but one way or another, I'm utilizing leverage to create the net equity, which produces the cash flow that can then pay for college.
Yeah.
Woo. Did I lose everyone? Probably.
I don't think so. I was following you. So that means I'm sure everyone was.
Okay. I'm sure everybody else is. So those are some of the ways I can think of. Now, the second one where we talked about real estate is obviously the most broad. It's mm-hmm. just like an awful similar overall philosophy and plan to what we believe gets you to become, like, you know, generationally wealthy. It's the, mm-hmm. the same principle. And that is, first you funnel the money into the life insurance policy. That's going to have, like, going to be your baseline, right? And now, maybe I should say base, that's your foundation. Mm-hmm. It produces a foundation that gives you the opportunity to do 100 other things, including invest in really any asset class I can think of, and do it freely utilizing policy loans. That's kind of the most powerful way that you can be creative and think about ways to fund college. But these other ways are really good ways that could be useful as well. And so those are just some of the things that came by. Is there anything, are there any other, you know, thoughts, ideas that I mean, we talked about 529. I probably shouldn't even bring up Coverdale savings accounts. Like, do people use those anymore? Are those out?
I only ever see that in, like, study material. I never have seen
that. That's
it
what I was. I was like,
life.
I don't know if I've seen that in real life. I actually do think I saw it once. I can remember a couple that I met with about 15 years ago, and they were very, like, they were in their 80s.
Okay.
Really great dude. George, he was a pilot. Really great dude. Anyway, Coverdale's out. So I think we've covered most of it. And I think the main takeaway for me from this show is, well, one, the situation is the boss, mm-hmm. right? It's not, it depends. That's boring. The situation is definitely the boss. But number two is, Dave's totally out of touch with reality.
Right.
Oh, wait, one more thing, Rod. I got a meme yesterday. Heather sends me a meme and it says something like, Dave still thinks you can buy a quality vehicle for under $3,000.
Oh.
And I was just like, it's just Dave being Dave. Like, I don't know who he's talking to and who, like, what world he thinks we exist in. I feel like he's one of those people that's probably like he has so much money himself that he just figures other people can make it work somehow. I don't know.
Well, and the other thing I highlight is that he solidified his philosophy back in the late 90s, right? So his whole thing about, well, the market just does this and day, year in and year out, you just count on it, stuff like that. It's all very outdated for sure.
So, but he stuck his flag in it and it served him well. So he's like, I'm going to live on this thing. Yeah. I'll die on it.
Yeah.
I guess I can't blame him. All right, Rod. Well, this has been a fun conversation. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And we'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Money Insights podcast. To learn more about the financial and business strategies discussed in this show, please visit moneyinsights.net. The views and opinions expressed on the Money Insights podcast are not intended to be individual financial, tax, or legal advice. Always consult with the appropriate advisor before making financial decisions. And if you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. This will help others find the show and learn wealth building strategies for themselves. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll catch you in the next episode.